People often ask what makes a leader, and though many answers exist, I'm convinced that one of the keys rarely spoken about but absolutely essential is the capacity to notice. Leaders approach the same problem that 100 or 1,000 or even 1,000,000 people walk past, yet they stop. They ask a different question. Why does it have to be this way? And how can I change it? The woman you are about to meet noticed that millions of people living on the edges of the world's second largest freshwater lake, Lake Tanganyika in Africa, did not have access to good medical care. There were many reasons: war and drought and political strife and poverty and the presence of 4 different nations. And then she had an idea. If you could build a floating health clinic, then you could bring medicine to these people. And if there was some sort of instability, well, you could just float away. In just 6 years, the Lake Tanganyika Floating Health Clinic has brought high-quality medical care to over 300,000 people, doing so in a systemic fashion that has addressed environmental and ecological and community and economic needs as much as the medicine. The founder, the visionary behind it, is Dr. Amy Lehman.
One of the things that really caught my attention about the way you do your work in Africa is that you're not bringing in foreign doctors. Instead, you're working to build a capacity locally. And I wonder if you could talk some about why you're doing that and also what you've seen. Have you seen people there, given the chance, really grow in their abilities, in their capacity as leaders?
Well, first and foremost, you know, The countries around Lake Tanganyika are not my, you know, those aren't my countries, right? I'm there because of, you know, collaboration and partnership with, you know, governments and ministries inside the government, etc. And, you know, again, not to be a Debbie Downer, but there's a lot wrong with humanitarian and development aid, because it's very top down. It's very like, we know the answers to your problems. And in fact, that is really often not the case, particularly in rural to ultra rural communities. That for the most part, right, are pretty disconnected from like a system of communication and sort of and data collection. Even like, we don't even know what's really going on in a lot of these places because of real supply chain and communications barriers. So this idea that we know, you know, because we're white and we're rich is offensive, right? It's offensive because we might not know, you know, and again, in the spirit of kind of scientific inquiry, et cetera, you know, this is not only from kind of an ethical perspective of like respecting the viewpoints of others. This is like science. This is like, do you empirically know what is going on in an environment? Can you, you know, parse what the issues are? You know, do you really, can you characterize, you know, what these problems are? You know, and it's often really hard to do that from the outside. You know, you can't find the answers to these questions. You can't empirically know unless you go from the ground up. I say to people all the time, don't be a solution trolling for a problem, right? Mm. Like, understand actually what the problems really are and what people really want, and then build a solution that's based on that. Don't think, oh, I have a great idea and I'm going to inflict it on you. You know, what if it's not the right, what if it's contextually inappropriate or whatever? Or there are certain barriers, right, to kind of integrating that thing in a real way. So I think that's the kind of general answer is to, you know, why often that's just kind of the right way of going about things anyway. But from a, you know, sort of a local capacity building perspective, I mean, of course we want African healthcare workers, right? That's the problem, right? People don't, there are no educational opportunities, you know, again, in terms of, you know, being in a low resource setting. I mean, we're trying to reverse those things. We're not trying to populate, you know, with, you know, doctors who are like taking a month to do some humanitarian work, which is fine. You know, again, in the right context, it's fine. But that's not a long-term solution. And so if what you're trying to do is health systems building, then you want to increase the local capacity of healthcare workers who want to be and work in that area.
What do you look for? Because you said some interesting, I mean, do you look for in finding the right people to invest in? How do you know this is a person who I think we can build their capacity?
Well, I think part of it is showing up. People who show up, right, and say I'm interested, and they also show up in you know, in ways that you know should put us to shame about our own sense of like what's inconvenient. I mean, showing up in that part of the world sometimes means taking, you know, a 2-day boat ride in like a you know wobbly boat, you know, going, you know, leaving your family, you know, and going to be in a place that you've never been before, or something like that. And so, you know, when you say to people, you know, we're doing this kind of outreach, we're working on this project, you know, we're trying to do this, you know, we're interested in community health workers and, you know, who is interested in participating. Just the desire to show up, you know, means that they have to surmount a lot, you know, it's an effort. You know, to me, it shows me a lot of just heart and will, you know, of wanting to do this thing. And I also think that when you say to another person, you know, I believe in you, you can do this. You can do this job. You know, that actually does make people feel like, oh, you know, maybe I can. You know, a lot of this is not rocket science. You know, there are certain things in, you know, medicine and certain kinds of treatments and certainly in the world that we live in, of, you know, tertiary care, you know, high-tech medicine. You know, yeah, there is some complexity involved. But the truth is that, you know, the biggest bang for, you know, the you know, healthcare dollar is on kind of low-tech public health-related ideas. You know, like, the reason why we live so long now is not because we know how to do, you know, super fancy surgery or whatever. It's because we have clean water, and we have vaccinations, and we have, you know, more universal access to, you know, primary and secondary education, and, you know, we, you know, understand things about, you know, nutritious foods, and that it's important, you know, when a kid is little that they don't get sick, if their brain can grow. It's like, you know, it's like that's kind of, you know, that's the sort of juicy part of, you know, improving people's general health. And for those things, you know, why does somebody need to go to medical school for that? Or that matter, why does somebody even have to have completed primary school? If they're smart and they have heart and they have will and they care about their communities and they're willing to learn and listen and participate, you know, why wouldn't we want them to do that? So I guess what I'm trying to say is that people who, you know, are engineers or people who, you know, are environmental science people or, you know, people who work in agriculture or whatever. I mean, like, that's why, you know, our approach in the Lake Tanganyika Basin is to work across sector. Because when you're talking about creating, you know, building blocks for a functional civil society, I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. You basically need to create a foundation that includes, you know, healthcare, but also includes some of these fundamental other building blocks that are really very interrelated. So for me, you know, the community health worker is like an ideal person to do a lot of the kinds of kind of foundational work that we're trying to do. The person's invested in the community, they're trusted by the community, and they care about what happens. You know, unlike somebody who, they care about it in a way that's different from somebody who, like, dive bombs in for a little while and then leaves, right? It's different.
What message would you give to young people going to schools like CHOPE today? Would you have a message for them?
Don't be a jerk.
Okay.
I mean, you know, like, regardless of kind of where you come from, the fact that you're at a place like CHOPE, like, that's a really powerful tool in many ways.
Yeah.
To have access to that type of education. And, you know, maybe take advantage of that and don't be selfish about it. You know, what can I say? I think that when you're young and excited about stuff, that's very, very powerful engine to fuel, you know, future activities and decisions. But it's also really hard work and the whole kind of passion issue to me is, you know, an interesting one because clearly it's important to be passionate, engaged about, you know, what you do, it helps a lot. But you also need skills. You need facts and skills in order to, you know, accomplish stuff. And a lot of the kind of, you know, there's kind of a slog, right? Of going through, you know, all the kind of basic stuff in life to really build something that's meaningful, really have the capacity to you know, execute something meaningful. And that's true, you know, in any field, right? If you're a musician and you don't practice, it really doesn't matter how brilliant you are. You know, you're probably not going to reach a level of excellence. You know, without kind of that discipline and the basic skill building. So I see that being in schools like CHOPE that, you know, have wonderful educational opportunities where you can do a lot of thinking and a lot of skill building, you know, like, take that seriously. Those things help.
In these past 6 years, what would you say has surprised you the most? Have you had any big surprises as you've sought to achieve your mission and
it's
craft?
It's all a surprise. I mean, it's like the kinds of things that have taken place and, you know, this sort of interesting, fortuitous, I don't know, just anywhere from, you know, meeting certain types of people or being in a certain place right at the right time. you know, to me, you know, a lot of this has been, you know, super surprising, but I guess I would frame it in a different way and say again that if you are sort of, if you're open-minded and receptive to what's going on, you know, what's going on in the world, then I think things that don't necessarily seem on first pass to be, you know, opportunities or sort of essential moments, you know, actually sometimes can be. And so again, that kind of openness is very important.
As a leader, because you are, I mean, you're leading this organization and you are the one who's sort of waking up and leading a lot of these community health workers in Africa. Have you had any surprises in terms of seeing people accomplish things that in the beginning nobody would have predicted?
In that sense, you know, am I always like pleased and happy to see this going on? Yes, I am. But I actually have the expectation that people can do a lot. You know, so I'm not surprised when people rise to the occasion and do them, because I do think that people have that capacity in them. And I think part of the problem in some of these parts of the world is that the outside world just has the lowest possible expectation of people's behavior. And in a way, just in the same kind of feedback loop of being like, I believe in you, and the person is, okay, great. No, I believe in me. Thanks. You make it great. You know, I think that opposite negative feedback loop happens too. Like, I don't believe in you. I think you in the lowest, you know, at the lowest kind of common denominator. I'm not, you know, and I'm not going to give you a chance. And I think that also gets internalized. People internalize those kinds of messages too.
So
for me, you know, I go and we do things, and I have the expectation that we're all going to work together and it's going to work. You know, so, you know, sometimes it takes longer, or we take a deviated path, or we have to retool or something like that. But it's not because I think it can't happen. You know, I think that anything can happen. I really do. I mean, anything, meaning, you know, good and bad. Anything can happen out there. And so how you interact with that is, you know, that's what you have control over. And so, you know, do whatever you can that's in your power to make it, you know, go well versus go poorly. That's it.
That's great. I'll just read back the little summary that I've jotted down notes as you've talked about your particular style in both being a leader and helping others. One of them is really pay attention to somebody showing up, their heart and their will, because that's the engine. Have high expectations. Model. And then really believe in people and give them that feedback. Is there anything more that you'd add to that Amy formula?
Don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk.
And don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk. Well, thank you for not being a jerk. And seriously, thank you for doing what you're doing and sharing some of what you're doing with me and with GCLI this morning. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye, Amy.
Bye.